Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9. I'm Melissa Idris with Julian Ng. It's now 9:35 a.m. Time for Pressing Matters. And on the show, we have with us P. Gunasegaram, former editor of Kini Biz, an independent writer and consultant now. Good morning, Guna. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning.
Okay. So let's. The topic of discussion today is Malaysia Airlines. And you're asking this really pertinent question because you've been covering Malaysia Airlines for a while now.
I've been looking at it together with some of my former colleagues, you know, about Malaysia Airlines. And I think the question to ask is here whether Mala is turning the airline around and what really is true turnaround. There are two ways in which you can turn around a company. You know, one, you can slash the loss-making operations and keep only the profitable ones. The other one is to increase the revenues and reduce the costs in your unprofitable operations, you know, in substantially most of your unprofitable operations, and thereby creating a profit. So that, to my mind, will be true turnaround. Mm. You know, you're not turning around by amputating. You are turning around by actually reviving the operations and putting it back to what it is capable of earning, you know.
Do you think is something that will take time? Because there are possibly various stages to the turnaround. And in the short term, what you want to do is to regroup and cut costs before re-attacking the mission, the commercial mission, as the case may be.
I think, I mean, in this case here, it's not as if Malaysia Airlines is not being left without any money. You know, there is an amount of $6 billion which has been committed to Malaysia Airlines by its only shareholder now, Khazanah National. This is after something like 17 billion ringgit has been injected into Malaysia Airlines through government
funds.
Not
all of it went to Malaysia Airlines, though. Some of it went into the hands of private investors to be compensated. And I guess that the word is bailout, right?
Well, you know, I think that this question is extremely pertinent. What does a true turnaround look like, right? But I want to know, Guna, what makes you think that, what signals are you seeing now to make you think that this is not, in fact, the case, in Malaysia?
I think what I am concerned about is the paucity of proper information regarding Malaysia Airlines operations. You know? So if you are actually really turning around the airline, then why the reluctance to give us the figures to show that it's really turning around? You know? So we need to know, and the only way to know is for the figures to be provided. So how much, for instance, are Malaysia Airlines load factors? You know? So load factor is a measure of capacity utilization in the aircraft industry. How much are you filling up your planes, right? And what kind of fares are you charging? You know, how does your fare compare with that of other full-service airlines which operate in the region, such as Cathay Pacific, such as SIA, such as Thai, such as Garuda? So those things are important. And you can compare your revenue per unit by comparing it with these other airlines. You know, so what is the technical name is yield, which is basically revenue per unit capacity. So if you're charging too low fares, then what will happen is your revenue per unit will be at low levels compared to the other airlines. So historically, Malaysia Airlines has had a cost advantage over the other airlines in the region, which means their unit costs are lower than those of other airlines. But they had a revenue gap. You know? Their revenue per unit capacity was actually lower than virtually all the other airlines in this region.
Okay.
Cathay, so SIA, and Thai.
So their costs were low, but their revenue was low as well. So the idea is, so what gave them such low costs?
I think basically because the wage structure is low, you know, especially if you compare with SIA and Cathay. Thai should be around the same level in terms of wages, but for some reason, we were even lower than Thai Airways in terms of the unit cost.
There was the other argument that is getting a lot of funding from the government. Does that contribute to the low-cost environment as well? I mean, we've moved a very long way from when nasi lemak was sold to Malaysian Airlines at 150 ringgit or something like that per plate to Malaysian Airlines, right? But could government support be one of those reasons?
Not likely, you know, because at the end of the day, the government is not extending loans directly to Malaysia Airlines, you know, so the loans will still be taken on commercial terms, but it is possible to get lower rates because if you have a sort of like a government guarantee behind those loans now. So in that sense, there may be some amount of slight advantage. But the point to remember is you're not going to get a lot out of Malaysia Airlines by continuing to cut costs because you already have a cost advantage over the other lines. What you should be doing is to be increasing your unit revenues. That is what Malaysia Airlines should be really looking at. So this is the area which the industry calls revenue or yield management.
Okay, so for yield management, you're talking essentially about raising prices and having more bums on seats, right?
Yeah, but essentially it is like what happens is it's finding the sweet spot between filling up your planes and the right fare, which will actually maximize your revenue. In practice, it is a horrendously tough task to do, but this is at the heart of all airline operations. Mm. So if you fail in this, your airline fails. You know?
I guess there's a lot of speculation as to why Christoph Mueller is stepping down as CEO. But you mentioned that 6 billion ringgit earlier on of support from the government. Does this have anything to do with why he's stepping down, how to spend that 6 billion ringgit? Because in your opinion, 6 billion ringgit can be spent on raising that revenue.
I think it's a matter of regret that the circumstances behind Mueller's resignation are not clearly explained. Mm. So, I mean, this guy has been recruited, internationally. He's the first foreign CEO ever for Malaysia Airlines. And then barely a year after that, he's resigning, but nobody is giving a solid reason behind saying that these are personal reasons, you know. So usually, the norm is that when people leave under these kind of circumstances, it is usually because of some kind of disagreement either with the board or the shareholders and so on. You know? So that is the kind of reason that you have for people actually stepping down from this. But Mueller has always been emphasizing the cost part of the operations. You know? He has not been talking about, say, using the reputation that the Malaysia Airlines used to have as a five-star airline to increase its yield, you know, the revenue per unit capacity by raising fares to reflect that of a full-service carrier. You know? Mm. So that's not something that at least he has been emphasizing in public, but in public he has been emphasizing the cost-cutting part of it.
Yeah, and I think the perception of cost-cutting gets amplified, especially if you go on board expecting five-star service, and then you're at the back of your mind you're thinking, oh, but this is an airline that's undergoing cost-cutting. Am I going to feel that in my cabin experience? I just wanted to go back to your sweet spot discussion earlier, your point earlier, Guna. How is it that airlines can find that sweet spot, especially for an airline like Malaysia Airlines, which I feel has lost its way in terms of its identity a little bit?
Yeah, from what I understand, we don't have any personal experience of it. What you do is to examine every route, you know, and then look at how you can maximize the revenue from each of these routes, you know, and this involves computer simulations with expensive computer equipment and so on to actually try and see what is the fare which will give you a combination of load factor plus fare, which will maximize the revenue for you. Mm-hmm. You know? So, in the case of Malaysia Airlines, anecdotally, you can try this for yourself. You know, go out and book a flight for a regional flight, let's say for 3 months out. You know, and then check it with, against that of AirAsia, you know, our very successful low-cost airline. I have done this, so recently I did it for Bali, for instance, you know, if you check the fare 3 months out, Malaysia Airlines fare for 30 kilograms of luggage, you know, food provided and so on, but of course no more drinks for short-haul flights, which we'll maybe talk about afterwards. And it's cheaper than AirAsia's. So, I mean, that to me indicates a total mispricing. You know, how can a full-service carrier, 3 months out, charge an airfare for a destination such as Bali, which is lower than AirAsia?
So this brings us to the question of whether we really need a national airline, because people can take AirAsia. And I guess you can read it either way, that there is bad yield management on the part of Malaysian Airlines, or the fact that Malaysian Airlines has to succumb to the pressures of the market, in that people may not want to pay the kind of prices that MAS is charging. So And when you book your tickets, all you want is the cheapest price. You don't necessarily go with a national airline.
I think in this sense, I do agree with Julian, because perhaps coming in your perspective, Gunnar, you don't see Malaysia Airlines competing as a full-service carrier, competing with a low-cost carrier like AirAsia. Whereas for consumers, I don't see the distinction. I'm just going to go for the cheapest price. Yeah. And perhaps Malaysia Airlines is cognizant of that and says, I will drop my pricing to compete with AirAsia.
Well, assuming a rational consumer, so I will try, I would go for Malaysia Airlines because it's cheaper than AirAsia anyway, and I have a much better flight experience, I get food, I've got more leg room, and so on and so forth. But so why are you already charging cheaper than your low-cost airline? So you should be selling at a small premium.
I guess the underlying question is that consumers or travelers are not very patriotic when it comes to booking flights, right?
So it's not a matter of patriotism here.
It's purely a commercial decision, right?
It's a commercial decision.
Do you, given that it's a commercial decision, why is there so much sentiment attached to the need for a national airline?
All right. If you were to look at certain things, I mean, the movement of traffic in and out of the country is considered to be something which is vital for a nation to control to some extent.
Yeah, because right? You just want to make sure that there are flights coming in,
connectivity.
Yeah, connectivity.
Right. Essentially, you want connectivity, and then so if you have an airline which is substantially owned by, say, Malaysians, not necessarily by the government, then that part of it will be taken care of. Isn't it? And the other thing to remember is if you have, say, Malaysians now travel a lot, for instance, then you already have an airline which can, you know, which can capture that market which is already ready there to be exploited. So I think, for instance, I mean, the London KL route by most accounts is an extremely profitable one. So
That's still going, right?
That's going on, okay. Yes. That's not X. You know? So that is one, that's about the only long-haul flight which is still going on.
9:48 right now. Well, tell us what you think. If you are personally invested in seeing Malaysia Airlines turn around, would you opt for a slightly higher ticket price just to see the airline turn around? Tell us what you think. 0162019000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'd love to hear your thoughts. More with Pressing Matters in just a few minutes. BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. It's now 9:51 a.m. We've got P. Gunasegaram, former editor of Kini Biz and now independent writer and consultant, on the show with us today, talking about Malaysia Airlines and what is a true turnaround. Now, Gunnar, you brought up a point earlier I want to go back to. You said that we don't really know the figures for Malaysia Airlines. And that is basically the point, right? They took, after the airlines became private, a lot more of the information is opaque. But, you know, that's a trade-off between having full control of decision-making.
Okay. In this case, yeah, I think, Khazanah National took Malaysia Airlines private. So before, as a listed company, Malaysia Airlines had to make full disclosures in terms of quarterly profits. They had to give their figures such as yields and so on, you know, cost per unit cost all of these were given, but this is not any more forthcoming. Although there was a promise made by Khazana National to make periodic reports on Mars, they have not been forthcoming enough over the figures itself. Now, you know, so the reports have been rather qualitative. So it's pretty difficult to make a judgment on whether Malaysia Airlines is actually truly making progress. You know, for instance, Mahler says in February they turned around.
Yeah.
Okay. If you turned around,
profit, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
How much profit did you make? You know, you know, what were your fares compared to the other airlines?
I absolutely agree with that, and because for
what
all
were your load factors? Yeah. How much did you fill your planes? You know, if you don't tell us all of these things, we don't know. You know, did you sell any aircraft? Or did you recognize? Aircraft sales into your profit. If you do that, that's not operational profit. That's not an operational turnaround.
I mean,
you
know,
how much of foreign exchange losses did you make or gains did you make?
The fact that this thing is privatized, quote unquote privatized, right, doesn't mean it's still not a public company.
Why do you say quote unquote privatized, Jules?
Because it's still a public company. You know, all intents and purposes, I think this is a public company because it is a company that is of national interest. That so much has been invested into it, and I think it is only right for Khazana to reveal a lot of these numbers that you ask for.
We have a question from text message, this is going back to our conversation earlier about getting the pricing right in competing with AirAsia. So a question from Tech says that to compete with AirAsia and to get back the passengers that it's lost, that Malaysia Airlines has lost, is to undercut AirAsia. Well, the word used is, I'm not going to use the same word on air, but the idea is the reason why Malaysia Airlines is cutting their prices is to win back customers from AirAsia.
Perhaps, but undercutting has got to be a very short-term kind of a measure to get your passengers in. But this has been going on for some time at Malaysia Airlines, more than a year. You know, when I checked more than a year ago, they were also their prices were also lower than AirAsia and many of the flights. You know, so undercutting is not a permanent option. They cannot compete with AirAsia on cost because AirAsia is a low-cost airline.
Absolutely.
And they enjoy at least a 30 to 40% cost advantage over Malaysia Airlines. You know? So the only way that Malaysia Airlines can turn around is to charge full-service fares for full service.
You don't find Singapore Airlines trying to undercut AirAsia. So Malaysian Airlines should not be in the same market as AirAsia, but Malaysian Airlines has to compete with the likes of Singapore Airlines, Cathay Pacific, and so on.
Which is precisely the point of this other text message that came in. Malaysia Airlines lost their focus when they started competing with AirAsia instead of Cathay Pacific or SIA. And you both agree with that?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I mean, you don't want... I mean, if you really want to push for the idea of a national airline, you don't want... Malaysian Airlines to be in that space, that budget travel space. You want it to be something else, perhaps with something of more prestige. And that, unfortunately, is the problem, right? When you are the prestigious airlines, you've got to make sure you make money as well.
It doesn't make sense for a full-service, government-funded national airline, which is Malaysia Airlines, to compete with a privately Malaysian-owned airline, one of the most which has been the most successful low cost airline in the world, voted as such for many years.
Even with Ryanair.
What is the point of Malaysia Airlines competing with AirAsia? You know, so I think the key thing is what exactly is Malaysia Airlines' strategy at the end of the day. You know? So is it to just keep on cutting costs? You know, and how much can you cut costs? And Malaysia Airlines itself, I said that it's going to become a regional airline. You know, so what does that mean? You know,
and what does a regional airline mean? Like within 3 to 5 hours, I'm thinking.
You're probably thinking maybe Australia max. You know, so that will be perhaps if you are talking Melbourne, it might be perhaps 10 hours.
8 hours, I think. Oh, I'm not sure.
And then you still keep London, which is profitable. That's about the only true international kind of a route. You know, so which means that I suppose one way could be, okay, let's consolidate make profits, and then we think about expanding. Perhaps that's that could be one of the strategies that they're thinking about.
Now, I want to go back to that 6 billion ringgit that you talked about. Mm. How far can this 6 billion ringgit go? Because if I look at the first quarter results of Singapore Airlines, according to the website Motley Fool, they spent about 600 million Sing dollars. That's about almost 2 billion ringgit. Mm. Is 6 billion enough to go on that revenue expansion agenda that you talk about?
You see, revenue expansion would be one of the things. It's primarily pricing, you know, which does not cost you very much beyond getting the expertise for doing your revenue management very well. So if you get that right, the returns that you get is out of all proportion to your cost, you know. But if you are actually expanding your services, which Malaysia Airlines is not, then you may need more capital expenditure than normal. So when you're in a sort of like a contractionary mode, then the need for further expenditure is really not that that much, you know, unless you're expanding. You know?
I also want to ask, you know, while we have you here, I mean, what do you think about this whole debate of having a foreigner or a local lead Malaysia Airlines? A lot's been said about the succession plan after Mueller leaves, but do you have strong feelings about whether it is a foreigner or a local who leads Malaysia Airlines?
I think it may be okay for a foreigner to lead Malaysia Airlines, but you must have a top which is diversified, you know. So that does not seem to be the case now, because the top seems to be completely filled with foreigners at the moment. And I don't see any Malaysian being identified as a sort of like a successor to the various positions at the top at this point of time. And the other thing is, most of them seem to have a low-cost airline background and not a full-service carrier background, which again is not to Malaysia Airlines' advantage. You know? Since 1937, when I think the old Malayan Airways was set up, we have had you know, local CEOs all the time. You know? So it's not imperative that you have a foreign CEO, but if you have a foreign CEO, you must also provide for some amount of, you know, expertise being, you know, and experience being passed on to the locals as well.
I want to nominate you, Guna, because you have some free time now. You should perhaps submit your CV.
No.
Okay, it's 9.
We are just armchair critics.
9:59 at the moment. We've run out of time. Guna, thank you so much for being on Pressing Matters.
Thank you.
You've just heard P. Gunasegram, former editor of Kini Biz, an independent writer and consultant. I'm Melissa Idris with Julian Ng for BFM 89.9, the business station.